At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Sahara Khoury. I'm an Oakland-based artist, and I'm an Ear Hustle listener. The following episode of Ear Hustle contains language and content that may not be suitable for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
One evening, I was going to Walmart. I left about 8:30. It was dark. Came out, got in my car, forgot to turn my lights on, going down the streets. Got pulled over by the police. Back in the day, I might have even ran from or whatever. Now, I didn't panic. I knew that I had my license, my registration, and insurance. I hadn't committed no crimes. I was 100% legit. I knew I was good. This day and age, especially an older black man, you know better than to do anything stupid. You keep your hands on your steering wheel. No quick moves, no funny moves. Just be real respectful. Yes, sir. No, sir. You don't want to do nothing stupid. If you look around, you can look in society today and you see that they're killing us for no reason. Just because they can. They put their knee on your neck for 10 minutes and with their hands in their pocket, just chilling on your neck. With people telling you, you're killing him. You can't breathe. You can't just hear him. Can't you hear him? The man's crying for his mama. Can't breathe. What can you do? Two other dudes sitting on his back. So I don't want to be that guy.
And they say, I don't want to be a martyr right now. I'm trying to live this life right now.
You had too much time in prison to come out here and get killed by the police. All the battles we done fought in there behind them walls and to come out here and get killed like that, this is a waste of life. So we got to be smart about it.
This episode is coming out the day after the one-year anniversary of the death of George Floyd at the hands of a police officer.
I remember coming across that video, just scrolling through social media. Mm. And the crazy thing is, I didn't realize that he had died till the next day.
God, that idea of like scrolling through social media and having videos like this pop up, just, it's so complicated.
And it's just a trip because I've seen so much of that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't like watching videos of cops abusing, you know, black people. But once I had realized that he died, it kind of fucked me up. But I definitely wasn't going to go back and watch it.
Ugh, Earlonne, I feel you on that. Well, for the anniversary of Floyd's death, we wanted to do something a little bit different on the show.
Today, we're talking about cops, the first time we interacted with them, and whether those relationships can change.
I'm Nigel Poor.
And I'm Earlonne Woods. And this is Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
At the top of the show, we were hearing from Ray Ford. He had been out of prison for just over a year when he got pulled over for not having his lights on.
So they pulled me over. Police come to my car, license, registrations, insurance. I gave it to him. He went back to the squad car and ran my name, came back to the car. He says, Mr. Ford, are you on parole? I said, yeah. He said, for what? I said, murder. He said, get out the car, get out the car. Hands on your head, hands on your head. Get your hands behind your back.
Getting pulled over as a black man is one thing, but getting pulled over as a black man on parole Oh, that's a whole nother situation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you are on parole, the rules are really different. Police have the right to search you and your property anytime.
And if you, let's say something wrong, do something wrong, they see something wrong, you can go back to jail.
So Ray knew this could go badly. But what happened next really surprised him.
They set me down at the bumper for about 45 minutes and asked me questions about the yard, about the board. Well, what prison were you in? What are you doing? How did you get out? Why are you out? They were hungry for information. They didn't even really care about me not turning my lights on when I turned the corner. They were more interested in how prison, how the board worked, how the yards worked, how the blacks got along with the Hispanics, and how the Spanish got along with the whites. They was intrigued. They was really intrigued with a man serving that much time in prison and coming home and driving down the street, minding his own business.
Without his lights on.
Yeah, well. He said, you're the first person that I pulled over that's ever been out on parole for murder. I said, well, you just keep pulling people over and you're going to find more of us because they're letting us out. We're doing our time. They're coming home and we're doing good things in the community. And once it was all over, they gave me back my information, told me to leave. Didn't give me a ticket, didn't give me nothing.
Both Earlon and Yaya, what was your first encounter with a police officer?
Well, shit, if you say first encounter, you speaking as a kid when you looked up to them, you know, when you know, they were police and you probably wanted to be a police or a fireman. You know, I was in sports, and especially as a juvenile, a young dude, you know, our sponsors were the L.A. sheriffs. And there were certain detectives that used to, you know, be in our life a lot.
I remember we had beat cops. And they would walk around the block and they would stop and talk to members of the community and everything.
That's our producer, John Yaya Johnson.
They would even give us like little plastic badges. And so we would run around like we were junior police and stuff. And then slowly that changed.
Once I hit a specific age, I was being put on that car.
Like how
regularly?
Old?
Yeah. I would say 11. You know what I'm saying? Like regularly just put, you know, the police to see us hanging out and just put us on the car and just search us and all that. And we just kids, you know?
I remember being like 9 years old and our beat cop changed. His energy was different. He walked different. And one day when I was walking to the store, he asked me to come here. And he pointed to his pocket and he had some pens in his pocket. He said, you like these pens? And I was like, you know, kind of confused why he would ask me why I like pens, right? He said, man, you can have one of them, any one of them you want. You can just grab it. And I didn't know anything, you know, at 9 years old about what was going on. He said, come on, man, come over here and get one of these pens. There was something about his energy that I didn't like, and I ran. And it was years later that I was watching TV or something. And I saw an officer tell someone to reach for something. And when he reached for it, he pulled out his nightstick and bust his head open. So I don't know if that's what he was intending to do with me, but I got negative vibes when he asked me to reach for something that didn't belong to me.
How old were you?
I was 9. And from that point on, I didn't trust that beat cop.
Nigel, did you get pulled over by the police between the age of 5 and 18?
Actually, I never told you guys that I was arrested by misidentification and really beat up by the police when I was 16.
Mm.
Yeah.
And how did you feel?
It was horrible. They told me they were going to rape me. They threw me in the back of an unidentified car, drove me around Boston, wouldn't let me make a phone call. It was horrible. Yeah, that changed how I felt about the police. Yeah. And that made me think like, wow, they had no empathy. They just wanted to really scare somebody.
That's a trip that you'd have to go through that. I mean, and you would think the people that's there to serve and protect, didn't.
No, they wanted protect. To intimidate and scare a kid. Well, I mean, 16. I don't know if that's a kid.
That's a kid. And did that change your perspective?
Well, it definitely changed my perspective on people and people's lack of empathy. Because, you know, like when the cops were dragging me down the street and I was screaming for help, people were just, you know, cheering them on. Hmm. And I mean, it was a long time ago, but I remember there was this one guy who tried to help out and do something, but everyone else was like rooting for the cops, you know, not for me.
It was like you were the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the first time I had that feeling.
Oh, yeah? When was that?
It was when I was 9. And I know I've told this story on the show before, but I got arrested for lifting up one of those train crossing signals.
I hate the story.
And the crazy part is I was trying to help. You know what I'm saying? Because it was stuck and cars was trying to get by. But the cops picked me up and put me in the back of their car. And all I can remember was crying.
You know, this is what I keep coming back to. It's this lack of empathy. And it's really scary.
And for me, you know, like I said, that's when things really changed with the cops. You know, there was no trust anymore. And I think that's the case for a lot of people who grew up in communities like the one I grew up in.
So growing up in Los Angeles, dealing with law enforcement, we was treated less than. We weren't treated as citizens. We was treated as we had no rights, no respect.
I knew Troy Tlaib Young when I was at San Quentin, and he's been on the show before, too.
Troy was released from prison in February 2020, and he grew up in South Central L.A., just like you did, E, right?
Yep, that's right.
One of the things that put a distaste in my mouth for law enforcement, I was about 7 years old. My mother and father was having an argument outside the car. Police pulled up. They asked my mother if she wanted him to go to jail. She said no. The officer offered my mother the billy club and told her to beat my father. 7-year-old kid, I'm witnessing all this. Of course, moms didn't do it, so they handcuffed Pops, roughed him up, threw him in the back of the car, take him to jail. He sit up in L.A. County Jail for 30 days. Both my parents had jobs, honest people, taxpayers. They never commit crimes in their lives. But still and yet, they was treated like criminals. How am I as a child to have respect for someone who doesn't show respect? As I became older, a youngster, a teenager, my dealings with law enforcement was never pleasant. Being pulled over, being put on the ground, been beat by billy clubs. They make you interlace your fingers, cross your legs, beat your elbows. So there was no love. I've never seen, growing up in Los Angeles, an L.A. police officer do anything productive or positive in my community. I'm not saying it wasn't done. I never saw it. 2019, I was in San Quentin. There was a police forum.
But no, I appreciate you guys. This is going to be a great forum. How's everyone doing? So today we're going to do a little bit different because I have Tony, my photographer.
E, you were out by then, so you and I didn't go to that event together, but I remember hearing about the barbershop forum.
Right. This one took place on the 10th anniversary of when BART Transit Police in Oakland killed Oscar Grant while he was lying face down on a train platform. And that killing really mobilized people in the community against police violence.
And so the purpose of the event at San Quentin was to try and bridge the gap between the police and the community.
Right.
And, you know, one thing for sure at San Quentin, you know that they host a lot of these events where they bring people together who are on opposite sides of something and try to conduct a civil conversation about super difficult topics.
Indeed. The flagship of rehabilitation.
What touched my heart was the chief of police at that time. I think it was Kilpatrick.
Tlaib is talking about former Oakland police chief Ann Kirkpatrick.
Well, first of all, it's my great honor to be here and to say hello to each and every single one of you.
She got up and she spoke at this forum.
And I'm going to do something that you probably have very seldom ever seen. But Jack
is Jack Bryson. He was at the event at San Quentin that day, and Jack's two sons were close to Oscar Grant, and they were actually with him on the night he died.
And that was hella fucked up for them to witness that. So after the killing, Jack became like a full-time activist talking about police violence.
I want you to know, on behalf of police, I am sorry. And I ask for your forgiveness. So we need to stand up and say we are sorry. And we have a future and a hope together.
I was sitting in the audience, and she had apologized for all the harm that officers had done. I've never heard that. I've never heard anyone in law enforcement apologize for anything. So that touched my heart.
You are coming home. When you come home, you will have a police department, and as long as I'm your chief, I will be your chief, and you will be addressed with respect by your name. You will be given opportunity for restoration, and you will be welcomed home.
That took away some of the sting that I was holding for years. I just viewed everyone who wore that uniform up until that time as being, fuck you, you an asshole. But that changed that day when the chief of the police made that statement. You know, that was a change for me. And I got up and I spoke.
Sir, say and spell your first and last name for me.
Troy Taleb Young. Troy, T-R-O-Y, Young, Y-O-U-N-G.
Talk to me, what did you want to discuss?
What the chief did, it impacted me. Actually, she just changed my life. Well, I can stop changing my life. And I told her, I said, look, I ain't never liked the police. But what you just said changed the way I perceive officers.
I need to know from y'all, how can I help get you to change? Troy, thank you so much.
I know it's a little hard to hear, but what Taleb did there right before the moderator thanked him was really surprising. I mean, Earlonne, especially taking into consideration the way he grew up and his feelings about the police.
And being in prison.
Yeah.
You know? And what Taleb said was when he got out, he wanted to work within the system to bridge the gap between cops and people in the community.
And when he was released from San Quentin, he reached out to the chief of police in the Bay Area to make that offer again.
I offered to be assistance in each community to help deal with the problem of the gang issues that they have. I explained that I'm aware of that culture and I have knowledge of that culture and I can be some assistance. And I put myself out there to work with them. I did the same thing at this, the one we're talking about for Oakland. I offered to be willing to work to help build these bridges, to help create some love, some respect. I've yet to been called on. I've yet to heard it from anyone.
So basically you're saying that you have the lived experience to help build a better and safer community?
Yes.
And you're just not being utilized?
And there's many of men of color who's not being utilized to help do this.
When we come back, we'll talk to a police officer, a friend of the show's, about what he saw in George Floyd's murder.
Support for Ear Hustle comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/earhustle. That's odoo.com/earhustle. Odoo, modern management made simple.
country, ready to mark the 1 year anniversary of Floyd. The year that shook the world.
Did you watch the George Floyd video?
Yes, I did.
What compelled you to watch it?
That's a good question. I'm not exactly sure.
This is Tom. Listeners may remember him from an episode we did a few seasons ago.
Yep, season 5, story called Tell Christie I Love Her.
For many years, Tom was a cop in Bakersfield, a town a couple hours north of Los Angeles.
Nowadays, he works for a large law enforcement agency investigating alleged employee misconduct.
So Tom has really seen all sides of policing.
Any video, you know, of police violence, it's a source of a great deal of ambivalence and conflict for me. You know, I can see myself in the actions of Derek Chauvin. I've, you know, used force against, including deadly force, against individuals any number of times. And so I always feel a connection when I see something like that happening. I guess one of the things that disturbed me about doing that job was I began to feel an ebbing of my humanity mm-hmm. to the point where violence became, you know, kind of routine and unremarkable. Yeah. And that, you know, that bothered me.
There's many reasons why I wouldn't watch that video, but one of the strongest reasons was I just didn't want to hear him ask for his mother. Like, I don't see how you could ever get that out of your memory.
I have so many things in my memory like that. It's another thing I worry about myself is how I can witness stuff like that and be so unaffected.
Man, E, listening to that, I forgot how raspy Tom's voice is. It is such a visceral thing listening to him.
Right. That voice is a big part of Tom's story. Mm-hmm. In 1997, back when he was a beat cop, Tom was shot point blank in the neck by a suspect he was chasing.
But really, that's just the beginning of Tom's story, and also the story of Jason, the young man who shot him.
Right.
But for now, I'll just say that the shooting and its aftermath made Tom question everything he ever learned about being a police officer and about his relationship to the Black community he worked in.
I had assumed, you know, really up to that point, that I wasn't a racist, that I was, you know, completely unbiased. And so I thought, well, I need to look at myself. What I had were these feelings or impressions. Maybe I was a little less respectful to a young Black man when dealing with him than I would have been with a white suspect. Maybe I showed a little more paranoia or concern for my own safety, you know? Maybe, you know, I did act a little different.
I'm wondering, what was your reaction when you heard him say that?
My reaction was, okay, we haven't been crazy all this time.
Yeah. I appreciate Tom's honesty. I always do. He told us that the problem wasn't just the biases he brought to the job. It was the requirements of the job itself.
When I got in my car and went out on patrol, I drove by a white affluent neighborhood that was part of my patrol beat. And I went straight to the minority, primarily Black community to do my work for the rest of the shift. The only time I would go back to that white, you know, affluent community is if they called, if they had some problem, like a burglary report or a loud party. But I wouldn't spend my entire shift in that, you know, or even a small part of it in that community because your performance in police work is based upon how active you are, how many people you arrest, how many people have citations, how many calls you clear. I mean, that's how they figure out whether you're doing your job or not. I could drive around that affluent neighborhood all night and not see a single expired tag or, you know, one cracked windshield. Now, I could find all of those things in 5 minutes, you know, in the area, you know, the less affluent area. Certainly there is bias at work here, but it's not the bias of the individual officers. It's the bias of the society that fails to give the opportunities and economic abilities to those communities so that they can afford to live a life. Because, you know, why does somebody not pay their registration? It's because they'd rather eat, you know, than pay their tags on their car. Why do they let a cracked windshield go? Well, it's because, again, they need to live.
I get what Tom is saying about impoverished communities of color and people rather go eat food than pay for a tag on a car or a broken windshield.
This is Ear Hustle producer John Yahya Johnson.
But where is the empathy that comes in for those individuals who are of the cloth of law enforcement to show a little empathy, right? Why don't we extend a little latitude as opposed to compounding the problem? Because oftentimes it's traffic stops like that that result in such tragedies that we witness in George Floyd's situation.
Mm-hmm. What frustrates me is that if you had followed me around on my career with a camera and, you know, took a video of every, you know, use of force that I employed, I can guarantee you would find some that you took issue with. You know, some you might even be horrified by. But, you know, and I hate to keep coming back to this, we react to our training. Mm-hmm. And in reference to the trial, it seemed to me in many ways the wrong person was sitting in the defendant's chair. He is a product of what conventional society believes to be appropriate policing. Now, he went overboard, but he didn't happen in a vacuum. We train our cops to be aggressive, to fear for their lives when they're out in the community, to believe that they're the thin blue line between chaos and order. That they buy into that, like I did, should hardly be a surprise to everyone else. And, you know, to address Yahya, nothing is gained, you know, by putting one man on trial. Where we need to gain is when they're being trained. They have to remember people's humanity, that their job isn't a constant threat against their life.
So, Tom, if you were starting your career all over again, would you still go into police work?
You know, I've got a rule about my life, and that is no regrets. The bad things and the good things both inform us and make us who we are. I wouldn't have empathy for the people I used to work with if I hadn't suffered the loss of humanity that job entailed. I wouldn't understand it the way I do. I wouldn't fear it the way I do.
Notch, a year ago, when the George Floyd demonstrations were spreading all over the world, you and I got on the phone with New York Inside San Quentin.
And I remember asking you both whether you thought anything was going to change. And E, you sounded so optimistic.
That was the straw that broke the camel's back, man. And I think it's going to be some type of resolve from this, you know? There's going to be some type of resolve. You know what I mean? Right now, people are really championing African-Americans, you know what I'm saying? Or black people or brown people, you know what I'm saying? People are really out here protesting, man, especially up here, man. And
that's one beautiful thing I love, because I'm, for the first time in my life, honestly, Erla, this is the first time I ever seen a whole world stand up. I really feel like my life matter right now.
No, definitely. I mean, like, no, seriously, like, man, I can go down there and walk on Lake Mary. It's a whole different feel. It's almost the feel of former royalty as a king. I'm a king right now.
I'm not expecting a dramatic change. We need something new in order to have a dramatic change, and that's going to take a while.
Bruh, I think it's going to be a dramatic change, bruh. Man, when you got people around the world, man, all on the same page, man, there's a problem. Something's going to get overturned.
A couple of days ago, we called Rahsaan again, and we played that tape for him. And I pointed out something that had surprised me about that original conversation.
I would even say sometimes you have rose-colored glasses on, and Erlon is the one who's usually cynical. But in that tape, that tape, the roles were super reversed. I wonder what you think of that.
I think that I don't have rose-colored glasses. I just believe in the capacity of human beings for the positive and for the negative, right? And so I think I see clearly. But as far as Erlon, man, I think that he just seen like the amount of people, the sea of people that care, and he thought that was enough. And I just know it's not. Even with the Derek Sherwin verdict being guilty and then being going to jail and that dangerous person's off the street, policing is a flawed concept where we solve everything with violence. And that creates more cycles of violence. And it really destroys people of color more than anyone else. At the end of the day, we look to solve harm with more harm after the harm, instead of preventing harm from happening in the first place with love and investments.
And so what would you say to Erlon?
Erlon, you were wrong, man.
Erlon, do you still feel like a king?
Oh, I definitely still feel like a king. But when I walk down the street, you know, I'm no longer on that parade float where, you know, everybody's cheering me on, you know. I'm back in the crowd. I think it was just the euphoria of that type of moment, you know, when you would like that shit to last.
Yeah.
And, you know, it didn't last because, you know, the next day probably the police killed someone or I don't know. Or people just going about their lives, you know.
Do either of you think that what we do at Ear Hustle actually makes a difference in these issues?
Hell yeah, I do.
Yeah, definitely. It's about seeing the value of human beings, and we definitely show the value of human beings, that human beings have value no matter what they did or where they at.
Do you think that we should try to talk to more people who we would consider to be so completely different from what our values are? Like, would there be value in talking to people like Derek Chauvin?
I think definitely. I think you find where the commonality is and what you agree on, and then that's a place where we can agree to get change, work on change together, because you can't change anything by yourself or with one demographic of people.
I really think that's the only way you're going to make a change is to have those conversations with people you don't agree with.
We don't have to agree with everybody, you know?
And I think it helps to find out why we don't agree. And a lot of times when you find out why you don't agree, it's really not that far of a gap from what you do agree on.
What question would you ask him if you had the chance to sit across from him?
Yeah, man, I would ask him, like, what did Black people ever do to you? that might be a tough way to start the conversation off, but I'm just curious. Like, what did Black people ever do to you?
What would you ask him?
I probably would ask him, so I'm just curious, man. Like, did you think that you were going to get away with that? Like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, oppressing people like that. Like, what did you get from that? Or what is the takeaway from that for you, for him?
Yeah, you know how we have to start, like, interviews by getting people comfortable? Mm-hmm. So that they're going to... What would be the comfort... Like, what would be the question we would ask him to get him in, like, the frame of mind to actually answer those harder questions?
What did you eat for breakfast today?
I had eggs too.
My eggs were scrambled as well, and it had cheese on them, just like you. I'm just like you.
What is he going to learn in prison?
Shit.
Ooh, that's deep, because if you're in an environment where you're not forced to take accountability or inspired to take accountability, he might never do it. He might still be thinking he's innocent, right? He might not think he did anything wrong. So I know I did it.
Totally. I was thinking, like, how many that said it took them quite a few years before they could see what they did in a different way, and he's probably not going to be any different, right?
I think at the end of the day, the realization that someone lost their life set in.
you know, and, and you were the main cause of that, you know, and it might not set in if you're still on the force and you still getting paid by the, you know, the force. But I think once you get put in that jail cell and you got 24 hours to think about that shit, I think it definitely changes.
I know for me, man, for a long time, man, it took me a long time to take full accountability for the person I killed and the person I shot. Because I felt like they had guns and they did this. And if they didn't do this, I wouldn't have did that. And the law says this and all that jibber jabber. It took really meeting a mother whose son was gunned down in the same way to really get me, to really make me see what I did. That's when it really hit me. And I think if you had to face George Floyd's family and just answer to them or just see or just hear them out, hear their pain, that's what gets through. That's what worked for me for sure.
So you guys both, would you agree that eventually he should be in a restorative justice circle and have the opportunity to participate in that?
Of course. He should go through all that. Definitely. He should go through everything everybody else go through. It's not, you know, he made a bad decision in his life. He got to deal with that bad decision.
You said to me that you didn't believe in long sentences for anyone, including him.
I don't, because sometimes those sentences can be... I got partners in jail right now with 714 years for robbery. So sentences is harsh. So I think there should be a cap on it, of course.
But regardless of how much time he gets, do you both believe that he could possibly change given time?
That's the hope. And one thing I will say too, actually, man, it's not even how much time you get. It's the quality of the time you get.
Yeah.
And so hopefully he's in an environment where they even have restorative justice or any kind of self-help groups. And hopefully he has a sentence that inspires him to take advantage of those opportunities to grow and to change.
Yeah.
And not sit around blaming a victim or feeling like a victim himself.
I know we have to wrap this up, but I will say one thing. This conversation really makes me miss coming into San Quentin.
I heard in a couple of weeks, Nas. I keep hearing that every couple of weeks. I got a great interview to do, but I'm not sure if he'll give me the interview. But if you walk over that library with me, I'm sure we're coming back with him to do an interview.
Okay. All right. I'm going to get in touch with Sam ASAP.
That's what's up.
Okay. Great to talk to you, New York. It's really nice to spend a little time with you, even if it has to be on the phone.
It's all good. Thank you for including me. I love it.
Ear Hustle is produced by Nigel Poor, Erlon Woods, Rashawn New York Thomas, John Yaya Johnson, and Bruce Wallace. This episode was sound designed and engineered by Antoine Williams, with music by Antoine, Rashid Zinnerman, and David Jossi. Amy Standen edits the show. Shubnam Sigmon is our digital producer. And Julie Shapiro is the executive producer for Radiotopia. Special thanks to E. Phil Phillips and to Acting Warden Ron Broomfield. And as you know, every episode of Ear Hustle has to be approved by this guy here.
So this is Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the public information officer at San Quentin State Prison. I was sitting there and I was listening, right? I think someone spoke about the first time that they had an interaction with the police. And so I started going through my memory catalog and trying to figure out myself. I said, okay, what were my interactions with police? I think that every Black man has a story, right? So initially, all of my interactions with police were really positive. I remember being in high school at a bus stop and seeing cops drive by and they would wave because I knew them. I had this ground level connection with them. But I tell you, I may not have made it to corrections because I had a negative interaction with police. And I think I was 19 and my brother would have been 11 or 12. My brother and I had went over to the Oakland Coliseum. The Oakland A's, before the season, they do a fan fest, right? Where you're able to go and get your baseball card signed or whatever the case may be. We were walking across the pathway and we saw these three or four, maybe five little kids. They ran up behind this family. It was a mother and her son. Ran up behind them. Took his baseball cards and just ran off, right? Mm-hmm. And my brother and I saw it, and I was injured at the time. And so I couldn't chase the kids out, man, get this guy his cards back. But it was on my mind to do that, right? Because it was just been the right thing to do. Sure enough, I make it to my car. My brother and I get inside. And we pull out of the parking lot, and I'm surrounded by police. I'm out in handcuffs, on the ground, face down. You know, the ground was wet. My brother and I are trying to explain it, and they don't want to hear anything. And I remember the mother said, yeah, it was them. Those are the guys who took my son's baseball cards. And it was a kid who may have been 10 or 11 years old who looked and said, no, those aren't the guys. Those guys had a hat. And these guys don't have a hat. After that, they let us out the cuffs. We stood up. Nobody apologized. All that was said is that you could go. And I remember a man just feeling like crap that, you know, here I was, you know, first thing from my mind was doing something wrong to someone. And yet and still, here I am on the ground. And there's some kid who ultimately says that, no, it's not them. That could have changed the course of my life. Instead of there being Sam Robinson saying, I approve this message, it could be, it would.
So you would be Earlonne Woods.
Exactly.
Do you remember the day that the chief of police apologized to the community for the death of Oscar Grant?
I do remember that. It was Ann Kirkpatrick, the former chief of police of Oakland. There's some pretty hard guys in there who were broke down by that. They had never, ever been apologized to. And I think that goes back to what I just said. It's important when you make a mistake, if you're human with people and you apologize to them. She definitely opened the door to a completely different dialogue that day.
Got you. All right, man. And let me just ask, man, do you approve everything you just said?
I don't know now. I'll tell you this, man. I spoke from my heart, and I will say that I approve my statement and this episode.
This podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration. Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. Radiotopia is a collection of independent, listener-supported podcasts, some of the best podcasts around. Hear more at radiotopia.fm.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
And I'm Nigel Poor.
Thanks
for listening.
Nige, Ear Hustle listeners are the best.
They really are. You're always in touch, letting us know what you think about episodes and sharing the love.
Yep, it's really a two-way conversation, a relationship.
Indeed it is. And if you're looking for a way to deepen that relationship, consider signing up for Ear Hustle Plus.
Ear Hustle Plus, it's a new subscription service that delivers bonus Ear Hustle episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
In addition to ad-free episodes of Ear Hustle, subscribers get behind-the-scenes, off-the-cuff conversations.
We have a monthly AMA, which is Ask Me Anything episode, where you and I answer questions sent in by subscribers.
And seriously, no question is too random or wacky.
Questions like, what's our favorite book? Do we hang out in between seasons? What's the most technically challenging Ear Hustle episode ever?
Okay, Earlonne, yeah, those are good questions, but like we said above, I'd like some wackier ones, actually.
We've also started doing episode commentary, where you and I listen to a classic Ear Hustle episode and talk about how it came together, hard decisions made along the way, and where the people in the episodes are now.
Yeah, we did that for Sellies, and it was a lot of fun, so we're definitely going to do more. And Earlonne, tell them about that idea you're working on.
Sure. I've been sitting down with some of our formerly incarcerated friends who have gotten out and are doing well. Just basically showing how they went from one situation to a better situation, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Those will start dropping in the Ear Hustle Plus feed soon.
Listeners, we want you in this conversation. Find out more about Ear Hustle Plus at earhustlesq.com/plus or subscribe right now in the Apple Podcast Player app.
That's earhustlesq.com/plus or right in the Apple Podcast Player.
So What is your favorite book, Earlonne?
Sorry, Nige. You got to subscribe for that.
Really?
Yes.
Radiotopia.